everyone. Welcome to our Friday, February 1st, 2019, Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting. And we do need Par, Tammy.
Karen?
Thank you. And it is 9:05 in the morning. So Ms. Olson, roll call, please.
Thank you. Dr. Wolf?
Present.
Dr. Hunter?
Present.
Mr. Delgado?
Here.
Ms. Gray?
Here.
Ms. Harlan?
Here.
Mr. Johnston?
Right here.
Mr. Young? Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our next item is going to be public forum, and which is item 15.
Chair Wolf, before we go there, we're going to do some introductions.
Oh, you have additional introductions?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Part two. First, I want to remind everybody that we are webcasting again today via AGP Video, our good friends from Morro Bay. And welcome everybody to day two here in San Luis Obispo. Reminder, to my right is our Assistant Chief Counsel, Stephanie Yu. To her right is Matthew Keeling, the Assistant Executive Officer. Clerk to the board, Tammy Olson, is to my far left. You can hand your cards to her for speaker cards. And then I think, as is our norm, we'll do a couple introductions. I'll invite Chris Rose forward to make the first introduction.
And okay, sorry. I got sidetracked with my cards, apologies.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm Chris Rose in the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. And to my left here is Diane Kuchel. Diane Kuchel has been working here at the Regional Water Quality Control Board in Region 3 for about 26 years as an engineering geologist. As of late, she's been working in the site cleanup program and also has been working in our Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, helping us out with replacement water issues. Before coming to the Water Board in about 26 years ago, she worked for DTSC, Department of Toxic Substances and Control, and she was also in consulting. And the reason that we're introducing her today is because now she's been promoted to a senior engineering geologist as a supervisor in the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, and she is supervising the ILRP groundwater unit. And in the groundwater unit, she'll be supervising staff who are overseeing implementation of Ag Order 3.0 and shepherding in and development of Ag Order 4.0. So welcome, Diane. It's wonderful to have you here in ILRP full time.
Thank you. Thank you. And then I'll also call forward Dominic Rock. Make it, I guess it's not an introduction, recognition.
It's an acknowledgement, yes. Recognition. Good morning, I'm Dominic Rock with the Central Coast Water Board. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I wanted you to join me in congratulating Mike Godwin of my staff for being selected to receive the 2018 Cal Fire Director's Superior Accomplishment Award. For his work last year on the Thomas Fire Watershed Emergency Response Team. He volunteered to join the WERT, as it's called, work long hours, and spend days away from his home at the team's base in Ventura County. He applied his well-honed skills in the field as a geologist, combined with some pretty cool modern data acquisition technology, and he performed critical mapping of the Thomas Fire burn area. The Cal Fire Superior Accomplishment Award, the Director's Award, came with a letter and also a ceremony up in Sacramento, which Mike attended. But I'll just read for you the first paragraph of the letter, because it sums it up pretty well. Dear Michael, I take great pride in announcing that I have selected you to receive a 2018 Director's Award for Superior Accomplishment. This award is due in large part to your exceptional contributions to Cal Fire as a member of the Thomas Fire Watershed Emergency Response Team. With a short time frame, this team recognized the impending danger an approaching rainstorm would have on the residents in and near the Thomas Fire burn scar. The critical work performed and the information documented and supplied to county officials was instrumental in issuing evacuations and saving hundreds of lives, exemplifying the CAL FIRE mission to serve and safeguard the people of California. So I just wanted to have you share in acknowledging Michael.
Woo-hoo. Speech.
Thank you for the recognition, Dominic and board. It was a real treat to work on that project and with the team of folks from CAL FIRE, California Geological Survey, Department of Water Resources, and I think there was even a couple of Dogger folks there too. So it was a real pleasure and good experience. Thank you.
Well, a word well deserved.
I didn't get a plaque yet, but I did get a photograph to show that yes, I really was there.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. So, just as a side note, I think as a proof that our webcasting is working, I received an email yesterday from Ms. Claire Wyman of Grower Shippers saying kudos to the regional board. The presentation came up, the sound was perfect, and a person had approached us a few times in public comments suggesting that webcasting would help folks who are regionally, not close by. So obviously it's working. So to our video team there, you already get a thumbs up. Next thing you'll be on Yelp and you'll get all kinds of stars. So without further ado, we'll move to the public forum item 15. I do have one speaker card from Mr. Edward. And just as a reminder, Mr. Edward, this is for items which are not on the agenda, nor today, nor yesterday.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. I will tailor my comments accordingly, and perhaps you can read between the lines. How's that? I've been a land use professional for almost 40 years, and I wanted to talk a little bit about siting of wastewater facilities in today's modern regulatory climate. And there's no pun intended there. The key to quickly permitting a facility is to locate the treatment site outside of the coastal zone. And I'm going to give you an example, one you may be familiar with, because I think their waste discharge requirements either have come to your board or are coming soon, and that's the coastal community of Cayucas. The community of Cayucas has a complete collection system. They used to be joined with Morro Bay in a common facility and broke away in the not too distant past. On their own, designed and permitted a new facility, a treatment facility, siting it outside of the coastal zone. They've broken ground and their timeline was about 36 months. So if you take the right approach, you can relocate a facility very quickly, not 5 years, not 10 years, not 15 years. It's all about where you put it. Additionally, I wanted to discuss life cycle costs a little bit, because the cost to run a treatment facility includes a lot of things. And at the end of the day, the question becomes, what does it cost to operate the facility over its lifetime? And what you have to look at, of course, are energy costs. You have to look at flood-proofing expenses in some cases. And then there's also failures. And if you have a failure at a facility, it can cost millions of dollars. That goes into the operating costs and ultimately the life cycle costs. So when you're comparing costs of facilities, it's very important to look at the long-term and the life cycle cost. And I'll just draw one more example of how things get done in a very complex political climate, specifically at the Coastal Commission. And in 2011, the California Coastal Commission told the city of Morro Bay to move their wastewater facility. And in sharp contrast to that decision, in 2017, the Coastal Commission allowed the South Sanitation District facility to be redeveloped substantially. And I will just close with saying the only difference between those two facilities was Commissioner Eric Howell. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. So this concludes the public comment period. And Mr. Robertson, if you can introduce our next item.
Yes. So this is today's prelude to our field trip. An information item about Central Coast Blue Recycled Water Project in Pismo Beach. It's an informational item about a potable reuse project known as Central Coast Blue, a joint project between the cities of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach and the Oceano Community Services District. Ben Fine, Pismo Beach Public Works Director, and Dan Heimel, did I get that right? Nice. A consultant for the proponents, are here to provide brief overview of the project. You guys want to go ahead with your presentation?
Thank you very much. Is the mic on? Can you hear me? Hello, check. I guess I need to speak very close to the microphone. Honorable Chair, members of the board, staff, and public, thank you very much for having us here today. It is an honor to present Central Coast Blue to you. We'll go over the project, how we got to where we are, and some of the technical details. And then later this morning, you'll be able to go see the pilot plant and actually taste the water. So historic droughts have highlighted the vulnerabilities in the city of Pismo Beach and neighbor agencies' water supply portfolios. The South County water supply is made up of state water for the city of Pismo Beach and the Oceano Community Services District, and then all of the agencies, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano Community Services District, who I will now, from now on, refer to as the OCSD, share in Lake Lopez and the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. The city of Pismo Beach took a lead to create a new recycled water supply. Our urban water management plan identified the need for recycled water, and the city received a recycled water facilities planning grant in August of 2012. Our city council adopted that study in April of 2015. One of the highlights that came out of that study is for years the city of Pismo Beach had been installing purple pipe with the intention of doing tertiary upgrades to our treatment plant and providing tertiary treated water for irrigation. And what the study showed is that it was much more economical and much more beneficial to do a full advanced treatment with indirect potable reuse. Central Coast Blue will leverage a water source that is wasted to the ocean to protect groundwater basin and improve water supply reliability. So this diagram simply shows our current wastewater treatment process. Raw wastewater comes in, goes through screening, secondary treatment, and then it's disposed of to the ocean. What Central Coast Blue will build is the advanced water treatment, and you'll be able to actually see this on site later this afternoon. And then it'll also construct injection wells where that advanced treated water will be injected into the groundwater basin and then pumped out into the potable water, municipal water systems. Preliminary analysis for the project, as we were working through it, we ran into some forks in the road, and there were actually many forks. One is that Pismo's production wells are outside of our city limits, so they're actually located in the city of Grover Beach. We have a shared groundwater basin. As I mentioned before, Santa Maria Groundwater Basin is an adjudicated basin, and we share that resource with the cities of Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, the Oceana Community Services District, and then along with Pismo Beach, that makes up the northern city's management area of the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. There's also the Nampomo Mesa management area and then the Santa Maria Valley management area. So it's a large basin that's shared by many people. And then we have a regional need for improved water supply reliability. As I'm sure everybody in the room knows, state water is highly unreliable. Some years we'll have a 5% delivery. Some years we'll have a 50% delivery. Some years we have 100% delivery. We don't know what our delivery will be till typically November of the year prior to the actual delivery. So that leaves some unreliability and kind of guesswork as you plan your long-term water use strategies. We also have a shared infrastructure with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitary District. I will refer to them as the district from now on because that is a mouthful. And as you look at our partner agencies, City of Pismo Beach here in the red, Grover Beach in blue, the Oceana Community Services District, City of Arroyo Grande, and South County Sanitary District, we partnered with our neighbor agencies to achieve a regional project. Arroyo Grande and the district completed a recycled water facilities planning study that analyzed a phased regional indirect potable reuse project, and it really didn't make sense. You know, they were moving down pretty much the same path that Pismo was to have two advanced treatment projects going on. These projects are very expensive, $30 million, and to have two for such a small area simply didn't make sense. And so we all got together and discussed, hey, what's the best way to move forward for our constituents and to protect the groundwater basin, and that was one regional project. So Central Coast Blue will utilize the shared infrastructure for common benefit. Currently, the City of Pismo Beach's effluent is pumped to the district's treatment plant, and we have a shared outfall to the ocean. So that line can be utilized to transport the effluent and have one regional advanced treatment plant. Interagency collaboration has been key to our success to this point. The City of Pismo Beach and the district have partnered 50-50 to fund the EIR for the project. We've produced a groundwater model that modeled the entire groundwater basin from the northernmost limits in Pismo Beach all the way to the Santa Maria River. So it really helps us not just understand how we can utilize the basin for Central Coast Blue, but also understand how the different management areas interact and how water can be stored in the basin. This was a partnership between the Water Board, the City of Pismo Beach, the County of San Luis Obispo, and the Oceanic District. Preliminary engineering for the project is being funded. It's a two-phase project. Phase one will treat and inject the effluent from the City of Pismo Beach treatment plant, and that's being funded by the City of Pismo Beach. Phase two will expand the treatment train to take on the district's effluent and inject it into the groundwater basin, and that's being funded by the City of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. External funding has really opened up new opportunities. We have applied for and were awarded a $2 million planning grant, and this will help to fund a test injection well to update the monitoring plan, update the basin level response plan, perform a leaching study, and offshore aerogeophysics. So this is a picture of the apparatus that they actually use to do the offshore aerogeophysics study, and then a picture of a result from a similar study. And what they do is they fly this array over the coast, and it's able to measure the differences in densities between saltwater and freshwater and locate where that interface is. Right now, the only way we know where that interface is when we see signs of saltwater intrusion in our monitoring wells. So this study will really help us to pinpoint where that interface is and how threatened the basin actually is. And then the City of Pismo Beach will also pursue and implement funding through Prop 1.
Excuse me for a moment.
Yes.
Just for my colleagues, I see some of you taking notes. We usually triggers that you have questions. I would encourage asking questions as we go along here and not waiting until the end, if you don't mind.
No, absolutely.
That way, you know, it's relevant to your particular topic that you're presenting. So I'll start on my left here.
Thank you.
Mayor Delgado, are you feeling better?
Worse.
Oops. Sorry, I asked.
You mentioned $30 million. How many years life does the project have? About 30 years.
Yeah.
About a million a year for the construction. Is there an estimate of the life costs, life cycle costs?
Yes, we have put together some preliminary estimates of life cycle costs. Those were done with the recycled water facilities planning study that Ben mentioned earlier. And so those estimates are available. In terms of, is there a specific?
North of $50 million, what's an approximate number?
To be honest, I don't have that total life cycle cost, but you know, we have capital costs and we know unit costs. And that what I would also mention is we're in the process of completing the preliminary engineering for the project, and that will really be where we develop the updated cost estimates. The current cost estimates are a couple of years old at this point, so I think that'll be the next opportunity to get updated costs for the project.
So at some point soon, you'll have an updated 30-year cost of operations, everything included?
Yep.
All right. The offshore aerial geophysics surveys that you mentioned there, is that using the aerial electromagnetic modeling technique from Holland or Iceland? Anyway.
Denmark. Yes. Denmark. Yes. So it's a technology they've used in Denmark, and it's also been used in several locations here in California. The graphic shown there, that's actually up in the Santa Cruz area, work performed by Silco Creek Water District. And so I believe it's also been used in the Salinas Valley and in the Monterey area. And so it has been described, it'll provide an excellent opportunity to better inform the city and its partners about the extent of seawater intrusion offshore and onshore here in San Luis County.
Yeah, that's a huge step forward in the area of Moss Landing, Salinas, Marina. It was used twice, once in 2014 and once in 2017. And the difference of technology was before it was used, these isolated sentinel wells were getting point data. Mm-hmm. And then the assumption was that between the point data, it would be the same. So they were extrapolating between the point data to assume what was between the point data. When they did this electrical magnetic survey, there were pockets, large bodies, pockets of fresh water, brackish water, salt water, that weren't predicted by the previous technology. So it was a huge leap forward, and I'm just glad to see it here.
So to your point, you can actually see that in this graphic right here, where there's pockets. You know, if you assume that it was just a straight line, you can actually see the pockets.
That would not be predicted by the Sentinel data.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Johnston? Ms. Gray?
Good morning. Thanks for being here. I had a couple questions. So the water facilities planning study, that was only germane to the actual site that you're operating on now. Is that correct?
What the planning study was is, you know, the city of Pismo Beach had been moving down the path of purple pipe and tertiary treated water. And really what that study was and what we were looking for in the outcome of that study is what is the best use of the water as far as beneficial use and as far as a cost-benefit ratio. It wasn't necessarily looking at where do you site it, how do you build it, anything like that. It was just what is the best project. And what it showed was that as you looked at that, and you know, one of the issues with tertiary treated water is the infrastructure to deliver that water. To put in the infrastructure in the city of Pismo Beach, which is a very small linear city, it's a lot of infrastructure to deliver the water to about 16 customers. And that's really what, you know, drives the cost up of tertiary treated water, is you're building all this infrastructure to supply water to just 16 high-end users. Whereas with the indirect potable reuse, you build the infrastructure and you're supplying water to the entire population.
Thank you. So as it relates to the CEQA study, what were your alternatives analyses? What did that entail? How many sites did you look at? And how did this one come on top?
So at this point, the CEQA study is just in the very initial phases. The notice preparation and the initial study has not been released. So that's in the process. I would add that there was a second recycled water facility planning study done by Arroyo Grande and the district, and that did look at both on-site and off-site alternatives for the advanced treatment facility.
Okay, so the pilot project is operating under a categorical exemption or something of that, a categorical exemption under your pilot project?
Yeah, the pilot plant is, so it's pilot and treatment only, so it's taking water from Pismo's wastewater treatment facility, treating it for a number of benefits, which we'll describe later, and then that water gets recycled back into the wastewater plant itself. So there was no CEQA evaluation required for the installation of that facility.
Okay. And so you have your notice preparation, and you're going through your scoping right now. Is that correct?
We're working on the draft notice of preparation with the agencies right now.
Okay. And do you have any idea what sort of alternatives you're going to be looking at?
There's been quite a bit of extensive work done by the city and its partner agencies looking for an offsite location. And as of today, we have the group has not been able to identify a property for sale for that offsite location. However, the search is still ongoing and being evaluated, and the intent is to really look at on-site and off-site.
So the city and our partner agencies have actually hired a property acquisition consultant. We identified a number of properties that could be utilized. One of the issues is this: there's been some rezoning in the South County, and property owners are very hesitant to lock up or sell their property because of the increased value due to the rezoning. Plug in or find another power supply. Anybody have assistance, technical assistance?
Ben, you're pretty energetic. You could have power it.
Plugged in.
Is it plugged in at any? Well, while they look at that, so we have been looking for another site. In a perfect world, this facility be located outside of the floodplain and outside of the coastal zone. That is our desire. Finding a property suitable with an owner that's willing to sell or enter into an option agreement has proven very difficult. We have contacted many property owners through the help of the property acquisition consultant, and nobody has been willing to either enter into an option agreement or to sell their property. So we continue to look on a daily basis. And, you know, again, our preferred location would be outside the floodplain, outside the coastal zone.
Right.
And that's what we, you know, are looking for. We need about an acre and a half. So if anybody knows of an acre and a half parcel in the South County, please call me at 805-773-7037. That's 805-773-7037.
So you think CEQA is going to take about a year? Is that your anticipated schedule at this point?
Yeah, we anticipate completing that in early 2020.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
In the same line of questioning, thank you, Ms. Gray, for pursuing the CEQA aspect of it. That's clarifying. What is the timing? What is your time limit on determining an alternative site, given grants and deliverables and the planning process that these communities have been into? At what point do you have no other option but to locate at the South County?
So we applied for and were unsuccessful in a implementation grant. Mm-hmm. Had we been successful in the implementation grant, there would have been a timeline on when we need to have the project completed by.
Okay.
Right now, we don't have any funds that have a timeline on them for completion of the actual plant.
Okay.
So as of right now, although it is a top priority, I know for my city council, and I'm assuming for the other member agencies, to get this project complete, there's not a hard timeline.
Okay. All right, good. Still fluid.
So, and I do want to recognize the other agencies, the City of Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, the Oceana Community Services District, the County of San Luis Obispo, Water Board. I can't highlight enough the amount of collaboration that has gone into this project to this point. And while I'm here from the City of Pismo Beach, I'm really representing all of the partner agencies. Every decision that's made, every, you know, time we move the project forward, we all get together and we talk about it and make sure that it's the right direction that the group wants to go in. It's not a Pismo Beach project, it's a regional project.
Thank you.
So as a just a quick little bit of technology follow-up to the comment that Mayor Delgado made, you know, the aerial technology was highlighted by the San Luis Obispo County Public Works when they had a tour in Denmark, and then these folks gave a presentation here, and that's how the exposure to that technology came about. However, I'm sure you're very well aware that you have alternate technology, which is the soil resistivity and some successful basin delineation projects were done in Los Osos as part of trying to proof a little bit better where the boundaries were, and some demonstration sites successfully done here within the Edna Valley. So hopefully you know, you looked at other alternatives, and in areas where sometime even through aerial survey you do have issues, because as you know, if you have transmission lines, it will throw off your magnetic field. So this is not a, you know, virgin land, go at it. So where at the soil resistivity is not negatively impacted by any magnetic field created by transmission lines or underground pipelines. So if you do have underground pipelines, which are metal, and within your area you have a lot of old decommissioned oil pipeline. In fact, you have the maps of them. So I just want to mention, you know, usually a little triangulation helps on those things, using some alternatives. And the Cal Poly has the equipment that allows you to go 500 feet deep. And they have given presentation to the County of San Luis Obispo in regard to assisting the groundwater management plans with the basins within the county. So maybe I'm telling you things you already know, but I wanted to daylight this.
Yeah, no, that's definitely very helpful information. And the team has looked at the alternate technologies and actually will continue to look at. So as part of the Prop 1 groundwater grant that will be funding a lot of this the geophysics work, we'll be convening a technical advisory team made up of local hydrogeologists and geophysics experts to evaluate the situation in the South County, and we'll have the opportunity to recommend alternate geophysics methodologies to really get the best bang for the buck in terms of gaining additional understanding of the groundwater basin and the seawater intrusion front. One of the reasons that initially the team gravitated towards the aerial geophysics was the potential to be able to capture data offshore. And really one of the goals, unlike some of the other basins on the Central Coast of California, the Salinas Basin or the Oxnard Plain, the extent of the seawater intrusion hasn't migrated miles onshore at this point. So we have, and it's just a good thing, limited detections onshore. And so one of the goals of the aerial would be really to understand where that extends is offshore and try to identify and target those preferential pathways for seawater intrusion. But we will be looking at the other technologies because of the limitations that the aerial methodology includes.
Yeah, your go-to at San Luis Obispo County Public Works, as you know, would be Carolyn Berg. And she's very familiar with the Cal Poly program. And they had offered, by the way, to perform some of these test as part of a Learn by Doing of a university. So there is also a cost ratio benefit there as a possibility. Thank you.
Could I ask a couple of follow-up questions?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
CEQA is an environmental document, right? So what part of the process might do cost comparisons of the different alternatives?
You know, that'll be part of the preliminary engineering. And the initial recycled water facilities planning study also did those initial cost comparisons. When you're looking at on-site versus off-site alternatives, with the off-site alternative, there's additional costs included with piping the water from the existing confluence of the effluent from the two plants at the South County site, piping that to an off-site advanced treatment facility, treating it, and then piping the residuals back to the wastewater plant and the outfall. And so that's one of the primary considerations, but in terms of costs between the two alternatives, you also lose the leverage of the existing facilities, being able to leverage those existing facilities, admin spaces, lab spaces, those types of alternatives. But all of those factors will be analyzed when looking at the different alternatives.
Then the proximity of the potentially selected offsite would have a big influence on those cost comparisons, right?
Definitely.
So it's helpful to know where it's going to be, right?
Yeah, it's critical to know where it's going to be. And so the city and its partners have been targeting locations in close proximity to the existing district wastewater plant, but sort of outside of the floodplain, outside of the coastal zone, because it meets the siting criteria, but also keeps it in close proximity to the plant and cuts down on those conveyance costs.
All right. The Transportation Agency of Monterey County is using eminent domain to expand their transit hub at the Salinas train station, and there was about 9 different property owners, none of whom wanted to sell, and so they had to go through, they are still going through a process, but they've whittled it down. They've gotten deals going on about 8 of the 9. They're down to 1. And we've heard of eminent domain used in other things like high-speed rail. So it sounded like you've done a lot of looking and not found a willing seller. So at what point does eminent domain play in your considerations?
So that's more of a question for the governing councils. You know, eminent domain is a very tricky topic and process. The purpose of government is to provide for the constituents and to, you know, provide services and help them. And when exercising eminent domain, while you're doing that for a large population, you're really detrimenting the people who you're exercising eminent domain against. Nobody ever likes to do that. And it's definitely not a decision that's made at the staff level. And it has not really been discussed as an option at this point.
All right, thank you.
You have a mayor on one side of me and a former mayor on the other side, so I think they get what you're saying.
I had something in my head. I don't know if I can recall what it is right now. Never mind. It was definitely on the CEQA front. I mean, as you're going through the alternatives analysis related to the eminent domain, what are your conversations with the Coastal Commission on this project?
We've had conversations with Coastal Commission staff, and they are supportive of the project. It's putting a wasted resource to beneficial use. It's helping to protect the groundwater basin, and it's also reducing the amount of ocean water discharge.
So how often do you all meet? I mean, I know our county has like a standing, you know, monthly meeting with Coastal Commission staff, but
we don't have a standing meeting per se, but we have had several conversations with Coastal Commission staff, including Jack Ainsworth, their executive director, about the project, about the project siting, about some of the challenges, and they remain largely supportive of the project.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the questions, and please feel free to interrupt at any time. When Dan starts, it'll get more technical, and I'm sure you have more questions. So all of this has led to a new water journey that we call Central Coast Blue. Central Coast Blue will provide sustainable water supplies. It'll be able to meet approximately 30% of the existing demand of the member agencies. It'll put to beneficial use recycled water, reducing ocean water discharge by up to 77%. So these 5 partner agencies are managing our water collaboratively and holistically to create lasting water independence. So now Dan's going to talk to you about the groundwater basin and the modeling and some of the technical aspects of the project.
Chair Wolf, members of the board, thanks again for the opportunity to talk with you today about Central Coast Blue. So, you know, why is the city pursuing this project? I think we started off the presentation, you know, describing the vulnerabilities in their water supplies. And the biggest vulnerability in their groundwater supply is the threat of seawater intrusion. And so the possibility of seawater intrusion and even some detection of seawater intrusion first occurred in the 1960s and is documented in the 1970 DWR report. It was one of the big drivers along with nitrate pollution for the construction of the Lopez project. And it's largely believed that, you know, we hadn't seen seawater intrusion since the 60s until more recently, which I'll describe, because of the construction of Lopez as well as bringing in state water and the agency's ability to leverage their water supply portfolio and manage their groundwater pumping.
Can you explain the point of the graphs?
Sure. So these are cross sections of the portions of the Northern Cities management area. And What's been highlighted in here in red are areas where they detected elevated chlorides, or the EC logs detected the potential for seawater intrusion. Yeah, so the darker the color, the higher the chloride concentration.
Can you also briefly describe the Lopez project and the Nexus, how that benefits the overall sustainability?
Yeah, so in the late 1960s, the cities that we've described, as well as the communities of Avila, collaborated with the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District to construct Lopez Dam, Lopez Terminal Reservoir, and Lopez Water Treatment, and Lopez Pipeline. And that project allows them to capture and divert water from Arroyo Grande Creek, treat it at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, and then deliver it to the communities, again described in this project and Avila, as treated water through their distributions, directly to their distribution systems, and has allowed them to significantly offset their pumping and has been a critical resource even in this most recent drought with the detection of seawater intrusion. The agencies have been able to leverage their connection to that supply as well as State Water Project water, which is conveyed through the Coastal Branch pipeline of the State Water Project and connects to the Lopez pipeline and delivered to the agencies.
So the Lopez project, is this mic on? The Lopez project has really helped to provide resiliency to the South County of San Luis Obispo, to the water supply portfolios. And we see Central Coast Blue as an equally important project that 20 years from now, people will be looking back. And as they talk about the future projects that they're undertaking, we sit here today and we say we're so grateful for our predecessors who had the foresight to construct the dam and provide this additional resource and provide surface water that in the future, the next generation of folks who are sitting here, thank goodness they had the foresight to construct Central Coast Blue to help protect the groundwater resource.
But I think with the Lopez, though, as it was shown, I believe it was 2017, where we were at the heights of a drought, that actually curtailments of discharge and pumping was going to be enacted at Lopez, because you have three customers, right? Three major customers: yourselves, the agriculture, because agriculture contributed to this project, so in riparian corridor pumping, and then the third one is environment, since Arroyo Grande Creek is a steelhead trout migratory stream. And some of the concerns from Fish and Wildlife and NOAA at one time, in fact, was the overpumping during peak of the summer causing some of the pools to go dry. So, I mean, I'm saying this to support the argument of the need for diversity, but it becomes increasingly evident that Lopez certainly has a very good role, but with climate change, there is a need for additional solutions, hence why you're here speaking about this project.
So that's an excellent point. The member agencies have, in working with the county, adopted the low-level response plan, the low reservoir response plan, LRRP, that dictates how water and deliveries will be reduced at certain levels. That was enacted during the drought, and as you mentioned, deliveries to the agencies were reduced. And which does highlight the need. You know, a dam is great to help store water, act as a water supply, but if there's no rain, it doesn't help. One of the alternatives we looked at in the recycled water facilities planning study was raising the height of the dam and how much water could that provide. If you look at the last, 15 years, the answer is zero, because it only provides water, additional water, in the event that the dam would have been overtopped and the reservoir would have spilled, which hasn't happened in quite a while, as I'm sure you're aware. So it does, as you mentioned, highlight the need for additional resiliency.
Just for my clarity, I see there's a is when you refer to Lopez and Lopez Dam, is that Lopez Lake or Lopez Reservoir? And what's the relationship there? I see they're both on the same, are they both on tributaries at least of the same creek?
We're referring to the same surface water body. It's, I think, recreationally considered Lopez Lake, but, you know.
Oh, I'm looking at the map on my phone, and I see a Lopez Reservoir on a side.
Oh, yes, sorry.
That
yeah,
goes
the
under
terminal
Arctic
reservoir.
Road and a Lopez Lake.
So water is in the lake, which we also refer to as a reservoir, and then it's moved to a terminal reservoir where there's no human contact, and from the terminal reservoir it goes into the treatment plant.
Okay,
so it's all part of the same system, but
so
it
the
is
lower the lower reservoir is basically just a storage facility.
The terminal reservoir.
Yeah, he's talking about the intersection of Orchid and close to Lopez Drive.
Can I ask a quick question, Chair?
Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned the 30% figure that Central Coast Blue would provide to this portfolio. What analogous percentage is Lake Lopez providing now? Or what would it, yeah, what is it now and what will it be if Central Coast Blue is constructed?
So, as far as how much it's providing depends on how the agencies utilize their water, but about 60 to 70%.
That's currently?
Yeah. So, you know, like, I can't speak for all the agencies. Dan knows more. He actually chairs the NCMA Technical Advisory Group. And so he has more information about all the agencies. For the city of Pismo, our adjudication is 700 acre feet a year from the groundwater basin. On average, we're pumping 200 or less. So we're not fully utilizing our allotment from the groundwater basin. One of the reasons is we have the fear of saltwater intrusion. In addition to the water that Central Coast Blue will provide, and I'm not sure if Dan's going to speak to this later, what it does is it creates a barrier for saltwater intrusion, and it allows us to draw the basin down even more. So when we put in 100 acre feet of water, we can actually pull out more than that because we have that barrier and we can draw the basin down lower.
So if you had 60% of your water coming from Lake Lopez now, and then Central Blue is implemented, would that 60% drop to something like 40%?
What we foresee, at least for the city of Pismo Beach, when we look at our water use strategy, we want to utilize Central Coast Blue as much as possible. We have the ability to store surface water, to store state water, and to store the Lopez water. And we're currently working with the county to redo the agency contracts to provide actual storage rights. Right now, the way storage works is if you don't use water 1 year, it carries over to the next year, but only that next year, and then it becomes district water. And we're working with the county to revise that to actually provide each agency with storage rights similar to what Whale Rock uses. And that would allow us to fully utilize Central Coast Blue, put that water to the most beneficial use. That will allow us to store our surface water for future use or to possibly help other agencies who end up in a jam. We can sell the water, offset the operating costs of Central Coast Blue, and provide more sustainability to a larger region.
Thank you very much. Thank you. But isn't that, though, part of the issue that took place again back around 2017, where including the city of San Luis Obispo said, we're good, we got plenty of water. So, and we got in our saving account all this water because we've been so good in saving. And I said, I want to have that water now. And then the agency said, it's not there. What do you mean? It's in my saving account. Hence the terminology wet water. So, one of the danger is sometimes you, when you look at your allocations and your savings, you know, it's also predicated on rainfall. So we got a year and you have only 8 inch and the reservoir goes dry. It doesn't matter how much in paper you have. So, you know, I mentioned that because in principle, this is all great. But in reality, back in 2017, not just in this county, but a lot of places, including even the pipeline, you know, where the water was overprescribed. There was not enough capacity actually to deliver the.
So That's an excellent point. One of the things that we do when we have our Zone 3, so the San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Conservation District Zone 3, we just refer to it as Zone 3, they own and operate the dam. We have our technical advisory committee that we meet monthly with all the member agencies in the county. And one of the things that we discuss, and the county brings in a graph that actually shows the amount of wet water that is in the reservoir and how that is proportioned out per allocation and carryover water or stored water. If we're in the LRP, the low reservoir response, low reservoir response plan does provide a storage mechanism, and we do chart out this is how much wet water there is, and this is how it's owned, so to say, which helps us to plan for the future.
So as I described earlier, in 2009, seawater intrusion was detected in the northern city's management area of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. So these red dots highlight the two monitoring wells where the seawater intrusion was detected. They are located sort of around the South San Luis County Sanitation District, west of the production wells for the NCMA agencies. And the detection was detected in these portions of the groundwater basin. And I'll describe that a little bit more.
If you use your mouse, we can see it.
On the webcast. Gotcha. So, yeah, detected here and at these depths. And in response to that, as Ben described, the agencies had to dramatically reduce their pumping in the groundwater basin to allow the groundwater levels along the coastline to recover. And to push back that intruding seawater. An important consideration, obviously, is where are the existing production wells for the NCMA agencies? And so those are shown in here in the colored dots. So the red wells are the production wells for the city of Pismo Beach. Orange is for the Oceano Community Services District. Green is Grover Beach. And blue is Arroyo Grande.
Excuse me.
Two things before I forget. Will we have access to this, slides in this presentation? They're not. Okay, so we would like to have that, think, if we could request it, Chair, to have that available or at least posted on the web. Second, you mentioned that seawater intrusion detection was in the vicinity of the South San Luis Sanitation District. Was it within the footprint of the facility itself? And what data are you using? What is the source of that data telling you that seawater intrusion is occurring at that point?
Yeah, it was not on the specific site of the South San Luis County Wastewater Plant. I use that as just sort of a geographical reference point. But the data that was used or identified seawater intrusion was the Northern Cities Management Area Technical Group's annual monitoring program. Mm-hmm. So there are a series of what are called sentry monitoring wells located along the coastline shown here in purple. Those are monitored quarterly, both for water level as well as for water quality. And so what was detected in 2009 was elevated TDS chloride and sodium values within those wells.
So one of the things, since we have this graphic up, these are the wells that showed saltwater intrusion. And I want to point out the proximity between the monitoring well that showed indications of saltwater intrusion and the Oceano Community Services District production well. And that's one of the NCMA's real concerns, is contamination of production wells.
And Mayor Delgado, you had a question?
Yeah, you piqued my interest when you said detection was in 2009 and it was expected that the reduction of pumping thereafter would help to push the seawater back toward the ocean. What kind of trend have you seen since 2009?
We have seen, so since 2009 in the detection and the reduction of pumping, and I would also add there was a change in precipitation in 2010-2011 water year. But the combination of the two, the reduced municipal pumping and what we believe is the increased rainfall and recharge in 2010-2011 has pushed that interface back away from the monitoring wells. So the monitoring wells, as shown right here right now, are not showing elevated chlorides, but that's largely attributed to the action that the municipal agencies have taken to reduce their pumping. We've got direct observable evidence that the groundwater level at the coastline is tied to the pumping rates within the municipal monitoring wells. There's been a couple of examples where the Lopez pipeline, which conveys the Lopez and State Water surface water, has gone down for repair or up or maintenance. And in those scenarios where the agencies have to rely wholly on groundwater, we'll see a dramatic decrease in the groundwater levels at these sentry wells along the coastline, really highlighting that connectivity between pumping and groundwater levels along the coast.
So at those two sentry wells that had TDS increasing, indicating seawater intrusion, the TDS has gone down since 2009 at those couple of wells?
It has, yes.
All right, thank you.
So one of the other things that the groundwater model will help us to understand is we have the interface between saltwater and our freshwater. We also have the interface between the Northern Cities Management Area and the Napomo Mesa Management Area and how the water moves between the two. And so, you know, we're not just worried about water, the salt water coming in, we're also worried about fresh water going out to the other management area, which would then draw in more salt water potentially. So, you know, the groundwater model will really help us to understand the movement between the different areas and what we need to do to best protect the groundwater basin.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the groundwater model because it's an essential and an important component of this project, having that understanding of the groundwater basin and being able to evaluate the injection and extraction scenarios associated with Central Coast Blue. The work or the groundwater model was initially initiated with an IRWM grant to perform a basin characterization study. And this is just a cross-section from that study, but it really laid the framework for the development of the groundwater model. Another very important contribution towards the development of the groundwater model was the collaboration between the regional board, the South San Luis County Sanitation District, and the project agencies to utilize some of the supplemental environmental program funds from the civil liability for funding the groundwater model. And so the $221,000 was contributed from that program to the development of the groundwater model and to assist in improving the understanding of the groundwater basin in the NCMA and other portions of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. And just a little bit about the groundwater model. So the groundwater model is built on lithological data. So this is a graphic that shows over 400 lithological logs that were compiled and characterized within the model area. And these logs were then utilized to create a lithological model that characterizes the geology within the model area. And there's over 19 million individual cells within that lithological model. And really just leveraging the work done in the characterization study and putting together the best pinpoint data we have for geology for the development of the model. Another important consideration of the model are the boundary conditions. And so for this model, a critical boundary condition is obviously the ocean. So that's modeled in layer one. Another critical boundary condition that has been described, the model extends down to the Santa Maria River. And so the Santa Maria River is used as the southern boundary condition. And then along the eastern portion of the model, we're probably using the extent of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. The model went through an extensive calibration process that included not only the hydrogeologic consultant that constructed the model, but also review and comment by a number of other agencies and organizations, the NCMA's chief hydrogeologist, hydrogeologists representing the Napomo Mesa management parties, as well as the County of San Luis Obispo, and regional board staff as well, as had the opportunity to review model development. I talked a little bit earlier about the pathways for seawater intrusion. So one of the things that the groundwater model has identified is the threat of seawater intrusion, and I apologize, it's a little hard to read here, but in layers 6 and 8, the lower Paso Robles and upper Carriaga, When reviewing the calibrated period, the model was calibrated from the period of 1977 to 2016, we see a correspondence between the detection of seawater intrusion, and in this monitoring well, this is the 30 NO2 well, which was shown on the previous graphic. We see a correlation between onshore flow into these layers in the time preceding and during when seawater intrusion was detected in this monitoring well, helping confirm.
So had there been no groundwater monitoring at all pursuant to the adjudication?
There's a pretty big gap in groundwater monitoring that occurred in the Santa Maria Basin. There's some of the initial work done in the 60s and 70s by DWR, and then there was a gap of 20 to 30 years where we don't have water quality data for those monitoring wells. That monitoring then was reinitiated as the latter parts of the adjudication in the late, in around 2007, 2008. And so there's been an extensive program from 2007, 8 till now, but there is a gap prior to that.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
Please.
The lithological, basically rock study, I would guess that that's complementary to the electromagnetic survey, and that the electromagnetic survey is telling you where different waters are. And my question is there good overlap where the water is kind of explained by the lithological surveys, like, you know, where the clay aquitards are and where the sandier aquifers are? Do those two sort of work together?
Yes, definitely. And that's the concept. So at this point, all we have to work on is the lithological model and the well logs. But as we do the geophysics study that will be part of the Prop 1 groundwater grant activities, we will analyze those two and then update the groundwater model with the new information obtained from the geophysics analysis.
Okay. And I just wanted to note that you mentioned a landward flow, an inland flow direction. Mm-hmm. And that was the case in the Salinas Valley Basin during the drought. And then since the drought has broken, it's been a seaward flow of groundwater. So that direction can change depending on conditions, right?
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And we've looked at a number of graphs sort of characterizing the flow across that shoreline boundary through the different layers. And it's been very informative because, yes, it does flux inward and outward. And what we've seen is even in periods where there's a little bit of inward flow, you can see seawater intrusion coming in that doesn't always get pushed back out during the wetter periods.
And the reason that that's of paramount importance is that if there were cones of depressions caused by extraction wells, if it's landward, you're helping seawater, you're abating seawater intrusion. If it's seaward, then you're exacerbating seawater intrusion because of the where you're pulling, the what kind of water you're pulling from, which direction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you. So it's a good segue to my question. Your model has included sea level rise?
Yeah, so one of the scenarios we'll be doing is looking at climate change and sea level rise. Yep.
Thank you.
So to combat seawater intrusion, Central Coast Blue will include a series of injection wells to prevent the further intrusion of seawater. So again, these are the monitoring wells where the seawater intrusion was detected. And then shown here are some of the envisioned injection wells for the advanced purified water. I didn't highlight all of them, but they're shown in a line down, primarily following Highway 1. In the Grover Beach, Oceano area, with the goal of creating a barrier to protect the municipal production wells that we described earlier.
So, Dan, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Help me understand, the pilot project is aimed at Pismo Beach, Phase 1. And then following Phase 2 will include, I think you said, Arroyo Grande and Oceano. So how does that relate to where the injection wells are being located now? And why are they being located in the outside of the Pismo Beach area, for example?
Yeah, great question. So So all of the municipal agencies' production wells reside in this area of the Northern Cities Management Area. Pismo's wells are located here and here, as Ben mentioned. They're actually not in the city of Pismo Beach. They're in Grover Beach because they're in a more productive portion, well, actually in the basin. And so the reason that Pismo Beach and South San Luis County are tied, even though the pilot plant, which we'll visit, is at the Pismo wastewater plant, Pismo's effluent is piped down to the South San Luis County site through a land outfall. And so both phases of the project really will be focused on the protection of all the agency's wells. Really, the big difference will be the quantities of water that will be available for injection.
So, and that's another good point. You know, the pilot plant is located at the city of Pismo because we're testing our effluent. It's still a regional pilot plant. It's Central Coast Blue. And, you know, what the pilot plant has allowed us to do is to demonstrate the technology. It's allowed us to take the water that's produced and have it tested and analyzed to make sure, yes, this is safe and this is the quality of water that we're shooting for. But it's also allowed us to analyze the brine. And, you know, prior to that, we were just making predictions based on what's coming in and based on what we believe we're filtering out, what will be left over. And it was a guess. It was an educated guess and a model. What the pilot plant has allowed us to do is to actually test the brine. And are you talking about that later?
Yeah.
So Dan will talk about that later. And so we actually know, and what we found, and Dan will share this with you later, is that the brine produced actually meets our current discharge permit. If we were to discharge 100% brine with no dilution, that it's within our permit limits as it is right now, which was really fascinating information for us.
Yeah. So can you put this in context of how all of this timing and the planning and implementation is going forward relative to where you are with the CEQA document looking at the project impacts?
Yeah, so right now we're working on the groundwater modeling, as I described, and then we're also working on the preliminary engineering, or roughly the equivalent of 10% design. That engineering is going to provide the information that will be the basis of the CEQA document. And so we'll use the information from the engineering report to then be able to evaluate the impacts of the proposed projects, the advanced treatment facility, and the network of injection wells in the CEQA document.
What is the timeline for completing the CEQA document? When do you anticipate public participation or public comment period?
So we're hoping to release the notice of preparation here in the next, sometime in February or if not early March. Mm-hmm. And then the whole process will take approximately a year. And so we're looking sort of at finalizing the CEQA document in spring of 2020.
Okay. So you're looking at a public scoping hearing though? I think that's
yeah.
sort
yes.
of what you're getting
yeah.
at.
Yeah.
So before you continue, Mr. Robertson, kind of being a little bit of a timekeeper, I see that my colleagues are very hungry for information, and in some case, we're doing some deep dive in your presentation, and I'm guilty myself of having done that with previous questions. But I'm looking at the timing here
right.
because we have a field trip, we have to go to the facility, we have a tour, come back, and I want to make sure, you know, we're reasonably not having folks in Pismo waiting for us to
right.
say these folks
so,
are
so our,
behind.
Our anticipated departure time was roughly 10:30. Does that work with your presentation?
I can roll through this. I think we're getting close.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't want to stifle the good back and forth that's going on, but that was the timeline to get us there,
right.
get
well,
us back, and release.
I thought as the chair it's appropriate
appreciate
to
the question.
Kind of making sure we...
One thing I want to point out is, you know, we talk about seawater intrusion, and some people don't realize the gravity of the situation. And I use this analogy that if you run out of gas in your car, it's not that big a deal. You just add more gas. But if you run out of oil in your car, you're going to destroy your car. And that's how saltwater intrusion is. It's not like running out of gas and you don't just, you know, do something, fill it back up. you get saltwater intrusion, you've contaminated the basin, and to get that saltwater out is like rebuilding an engine.
I think you're preaching the choir. It wasn't so much for you, but for the public
yeah. and the viewers at home.
And also as a sidebar, we do have speaker cards, so that adds to the time.
Just another graphic of the injection wells and some particle tracking, but again, looking to create a mound, a protective barrier against seawater intrusion along the coastline. Talk a little bit about the treatment facility engineering. This will be more relevant to the pilot plant tour, but as Ben described, at the end of secondary treatment, Central Coast Blue will add what we call full advanced treatment. It's a three-stage additional treatment process that includes microfiltration, reverse osmosis, and ultraviolet advanced oxidation disinfection. It's envisioned to be a phase project, as we described. The first phase will bring on water from the city of Pismo Beach. Second phase will bring in water from South San Luis County for a combined capacity of potentially around 5 MGD at build-out. The project obviously will require will meet all requirements for public health standards, and I've just provided those here for reference. 12 log removal virus, 10 log removal giardia, 10 log removal crypto, as well as a number of other requirements that have been identified by the Division of Drinking Water for these types of projects. This is just a breakdown of the different treatment processes and the log removal credits that are achieved through those. Really, the takeaway here is that the pilot plant has allowed us to validate that we can meet and exceed these treatment requirements for pathogens. What we'll be touring today is the Central Coast Blue pilot plant. I want to acknowledge IDE, or Israeli Desal engineers. They were critical and funded really the construction, delivery, installation, and operation of the pilot plant. Obviously, it's been a partnership with the city of Pismo Beach and the other agencies, but IDE has been a critical partner. Again, just the treatment technologies and listed below are the technology vendors that have contributed to the project. Benefits of the demonstration facility pilot plant is acceptance. It gives us a physical presence for the project to educate regulators, members of the public, electeds, really all stakeholders about the project. Demonstration allows us to demonstrate the technology and optimize it. So move through this. We've got a three-phase testing plan. Gets into the details of the technology and the reverse osmosis components. I think we could probably move through that. And then as Ben described, one of the real advantages of the pilot plant is it also allows us to do real world test the water and how it interacts with the treatment technology. And a critical component of that is the compliance with the city's existing permit for discharge of the ocean. And so using the pilot project, we were able to collect samples of the concentrate or the brine and then test them. And we're able to determine that through six sampling events that the brine or the concentrate will meet the current permit requirements as well as the updated ocean plan requirements. And so now it's in operation, and we're thankful to have the opportunity to provide the board and others with a tour.
All right, thank you. So I have four speaker cards, and what I suggest is that we get these folks to provide their 3-minute comments, and then we can do a final wrap up after, before we get into the vans. So I would like to start with Mr. Jeff Edward, then will be Ms. Tacker. 3 minutes each. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning again, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and clearly recycling is part of our water future, and I support that. However, it's not without challenges, and I would respectfully submit to your board, Central Coast Blue has many challenges. First of all, it's a highly marketed project. Rebranded Central Coast Blue from another more technical name. It comes with a slogan, one community, one water, one future. Well, I would submit to your board that the community is really Pismo Beach. That's it. I think the collaboration they've represented is overstated. And as far as the project is concerned, there are no alternative sites. You know where the project's going. It's going to the Sand District. The total Central Coast Blue cost is $79 million. Phase two is a lion's share, about $42 million, and that's going at the Sanitation District. So with the redundancy project, you have over $70 million in assets that may in the future be stranded, in effect. The project, Central Coast Blue, generates 250,000 gallons per day of brine, waste brine. And it's an heavy energy user. I call it an energy hog. Greenhouse gases through the roof. And frankly, in terms of life cycle costs, they're enormous on the $80 million. The cost of the water produced exceeds $2,000 per acre foot. And I have to say that this notion, this premise of seawater intrusion is a fiction. I have a letter, and I'll submit it for the record, from the Oceano Community Services District in 2009, that their board of directors that refutes this notion entirely. Seawater intrusion is kind of a double-edged sword. Sometimes we want to use it to achieve certain things, and when we really have it, it's another thing. And in Los Osos, where I live, we do have seawater intrusion, and we're dealing with it. It's unfortunate that this fiction of seawater intrusion is being used so extensively to justify this project, because it is a fallacy, and I hate to see that. Just to conclude, I would say that Lopez Dam, and I may be mistaken on this, but the Lopez Dam was constructed primarily as a flood control tool, secondarily is it a water supply feature, so I wanted to make that clear. But certainly the groundwater basin at this location is not threatened presently. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So next is Ms. Tackert.
Good morning. I am Julie Tackert, and while I do, of course, support recycling water, I don't support it at the Sanitation District site. And we did talk about that site yesterday. And you know its limitations. Mr. Fine just mentioned that they need about 1.5 acres for their facility, and there's just no room on the Sanitation District site. They have some plan drawings that shoehorn the facilities on there, but they don't take into consideration wetland setbacks, that type of thing. But what I was concerned about and mentioned yesterday is anytime you're going to be digging for footings or such that are for these expensive facilities that have to be strong with concrete and steel, you're going to need water. And this is where your regional board does have a say in how dewatering is done and where that water goes. I'm sure they will dump it in the ocean, and that's disturbing to me. The redundancy project did get a approval from the Coastal Commission to use their site for 30 years. Staff's original recommendation for that permit was just 10 years, a 10-year temporary permit. There were political pressures put on the Coastal Commission commissioners, and one commissioner is a city councilman from Pismo Beach. And you have to realize that that body is much more political than you are. You are a regulator. They are land use, and they flip and flop with whatever developer romances them into allowing a development. Mr. Fine gave a similar presentation that he gave today to the South County Sanitation District Board on May the 2nd. And when I asked about siting on the same site and the permit, and that it had now gone from 10 years to 30 years. He said, the reason, and I have this quote, the reason the Coastal Commission extended your permit, the sanitation district permit, was because they are aware of this project. 30 years from when that permit was approved, 2017, 2047, these guys are 5 years behind. There's only 25 years left of the site. And it doesn't make sense, again, stranding assets from a disadvantaged community. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next is Ms. Cynthia Replogle. And I want to congratulate you because you're the very first person who gave me a phonetic clarification of your name. So I thank you for that. You made it much easier for me.
You're welcome. Hi, I'm Cynthia Replogle. I'm an Oceana resident and the president of the Oceana Beach Community Association. I'm also a director on the Oceano Community Services District and an alternate on the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. I mention my official positions only to state that my comments are not official and that I have gotten into political hot water for voicing some of the same concerns about the redundancy project and Central Coast Blue that I heard you all raise yesterday. With some powerful forces actively trying to remove me now from my positions on the Sanitation District and on the Central Coast Blue Committee. Now, to be perfectly clear that I'm speaking for the Oceana Beach Community Association, I will literally put on my OBCA hat. The OBCA is a coalition of residents and business owners working together to create positive change for Oceano, making the community more accessible, livable, and beautiful, while preserving Oceano's cultural diversity, historic character, and coastal environment. Oceano is an unincorporated town with a large Latino population. We have a higher poverty rate and lower income level than most areas of the county. The Coastal Commission's environmental justice team called Oceano the poster child for environmental justice, or rather, environmental injustice. Since the 60s, Oceano has borne the burden of hosting a sewage plant that serves not only our community, but the wealthier cities of Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach. It also takes trucked in brine from around the region. And now comes Central Coast Blue. Water recycling is something most everyone agrees is a good thing, in concept. But the devil is in the details. And the more we learn about how CCB is planned to be implemented, the less comfortable we are with the project going forward. The only site under consideration is in Oceano at our sewage plant. This plant is going to have to move inland in the not-too-distant future, retreating from rising seas. Yet the lead agency, Pismo Beach, appears to want to armor it against flood risks and tsunami threats without a thorough review of alternative options for siting. Not that Pismo hasn't considered other options. One was right on Oceano's main street through our downtown. Would Pismo want a wastewater treatment facility on their main street? As a matter of environmental justice, the OBCA wants to ensure that our disadvantaged community is not taken advantage of by a more affluent one. This project is being promoted as beneficial for the region. Well, Oceano has been taking one for the team for decades, and we're tired of carrying the region's burdens while enjoying fewer of its benefits. Another issue is cost. This would be expensive water. It's unknown how much Oceano residents would be asked to contribute, but I can tell you for sure many couldn't afford it. There are better ways to recharge the basin at less cost, and we would like to see more alternatives considered, such as lower-level treatment for ponding or agricultural use. There are also further opportunities to increase conservation. Oceano would be better off investing in stormwater capture, which addresses multiple issues. Portions of our community regularly flood when it rains, so if we could catch that runoff, it would alleviate flooding while also recharging the aquifer and helping to prevent seawater intrusion. So drink the recycled water on the tour. It tastes fine. But please don't drink this Central Coast Blue Kool-Aid. Thank you.
Thank you. And last speaker card is Ms. Lucia Casalenuovo.
You see, I knew you would pronounce it correctly. That's why they did not put the phonetic translation.
Well, but also you use very large letters for me.
That's right.
Thank you.
Now, good morning. Of course, I do applaud the recycling water project. However, please, it is absolutely wrong to place it on Oceano land. I am a Oceano resident. And I'm telling you that placing it on my on our land would be a form of a discriminatory land use because it disproportionately or overburdens Oceano, which is an unserved community, with the inequitable distribution of environmental pollution. We already are burdened with the human waste plant, with a private airport, and with the only beach in California that can allow people to drive on. Our beach, our Oceano community has been kept under the thumb of rich communities. We are being colonized by Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande. The state of California calls it a form of environmental injustice. Oceano has an excellent freshwater supply, does not have saltwater intrusion, and would not certainly benefit from the presence of such plant on our wetland. We have a beautiful vision for that wetland. Hundreds of acres of land which could be devoted to trails, to wildlife, to bike paths. We are badly in need of parking for the 2 million visitors that now are driving on our beach and across the Arroyo Grande Creek. We need a place where people can drive, stop their car, and walk to the beach, walk to Oceano downtown. Then our community would benefit. We don't have a park. We don't have benches for people who want to enjoy the beach. But we have hundreds of acres of land used by our rich communities for their waste and for their recycling water projects. So we would even like to see a campus of Hancock College on those acres of land. There are dozens of people from Oceano and the five cities areas that carpool and take the bus down to Hancock College from our area. We would love to see an extended campus of that college that serves minorities on that land. Then in the winter, during the rain season, it could flood because it is a flood zone. And in December, it could have visitors for parking to walk to the beach, for campground, for a day use area. Now, Pismo Beach, our rich neighbors don't want to sell their land, but they're going to appropriate it from our poor community. That is environmental injustice.
Thank you for your comment. So before we go on a field trip, I'd like to see with my colleagues if we do have additional questions.
Tammy's trying to get your attention.
Excuse me, a point of clarification. We do not accept anything at the board meeting that has not been previously submitted by 12 o'clock on Monday of the board meeting. Mr. Edwards had a paper that he wanted to submit. I did not accept it. It was given to staff, so it will not be part of this official record. I just wanted that stated.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Tammy, we did get this just now. Does that not follow the same procedure?
The difference is when we have people that we have asked to speak and they give presentations, it's a different rule, because technically they're help me out with this, Mr. Executive Officer.
I believe that what you have in your hand right now is just a copy of the presentation that was provided to the public and that you just saw. Is that that's correct, right? Yeah. So I think that's the distinction.
That's the presentation you just saw.
Okay, I thought in the past we had some issue of taking speakers' presentations.
No. And the only reason you didn't have that before in your packet of all the other presentations was because I didn't have it. But, again, presentations that we have asked for people to give fall under house rules, I guess, as you would say. But otherwise we don't accept anything at board meetings.
Okay, so do we have any further questions specific to the presentations? Mayor Delgado.
Just a couple of very brief points. Someone mentioned a $2,000 per acre foot cost to the Central Coast Blue, and I think that's actually quite reasonable. That's about the same cost as the Pure Water Monterey project, which is taking wastewater and doing the same thing to it injecting some and then further using it in the latter stages as potable water. The other thing I wanted to mention is that the circumstance that the last speaker summarized was eerily similar to the circumstance up north in the Salinas Valley groundwater basin. As far as the demographics of the city that's receiving the industrial projects. Thank you.
Looking on my left, any further question? Looking on my right? All right, so.
Honorable Chair, I don't know if it's appropriate. There are two items I would like to address from public comment. They're just clarifications. One,
Don't want to get into the slippery slope of back and forth because let me finish.
Yeah, sorry.
Because if we're going to make specific comments which could potentially be rebuttal to these public comments that were made, we really do not give the opportunity for these folks to further clarify their points. So
if so I just want to clarify,
if you stay
fact.
A little generic, I'm
very
fine
generic.
With that, but let's not get to you know, and this person said this or that.
So it was just stated that the Sand District provides wastewater services for the city of Pismo Beach. It does not. City of Pismo Beach has its own wastewater treatment plant. And then the other clarification is, if Central Coast Blue is located at the Sand District site, it will be located on a facility that's already 100% developed. There's no new development. And that if it's located on that site, the footprint is smaller than the acre and a half because we don't need as much admin space because that admin space is already there.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Mr. Robertson, do you have, on behalf of staff, any concluding comments?
No, I think I just want to say thank you to the speakers for presenting. Thank you, guys. And for the openness to a tour of the facility, too. I think we'll take a quick break. And then meet out at the Vans. Mm-hmm.
Just one more thing. Sure. I apologize. Today is our city council's goal setting session. It actually already started it on here instead of there because this was very important. I will not be on the tour. Dan will be conducting the tour. And I just wanted to thank the board for having us and the interest in the project.
All right. Thank you very much. Good luck with your next meeting. Thanks.